There is a place that is spoken about only in whispers. A dark area that spawns the beginnings of urban legends. A place where anything can happen and usually does. During the light of day, it hides just outside of view. But when the sun goes down, spirits, creatures of the night, roam free, and things do go bump in the night. It is in every state and every country, and there is no escaping it, no matter how safe you feel behind your locked doors and latched windows. So we invite you to turn down the lights and turn up your radio while we join Dave Schrader and Tim Dennis, your hosts, on a journey into the darkness on the edge of town.
Hello and welcome. You're tuned in to the best in paranormal podcasting. This is Darkness Radio Supernatural News Parashare Edition. What is Parashare? Well, it's when you have a pear and you cut it in half and you give half to your buddy Tim and you eat the other half, right, Tim? Isn't that what a parashare is?
Yeah, except for you've never given me the other half.
Oh, that's because that's not really what a parashare is. It's you, the audience, sharing your stories with us. You email in your stories and tell me about your paranormal experiences. We'll read them on the air. We'll talk about them. We may poke fun at them. Probably not. We'll take them seriously, try to answer any questions we can. So that's what you can do. Dave at darknessradio.com. Email me and let me know if you've had experiences. And paranormal can be anything out of the ordinary. Ghosts, UFOs, aliens, demons, Ouija boards, angels, psychic phenomena, premonitions. Any strange stories you've got, share them with us, dave@darknessradio.com, and we will share them as the show progresses. We also have supernatural news from around the world. And speaking of Tim, so I'm in an undisclosed location, right, filming a new TV series. So all of you that are upset about Holzer Files not being renewed, I will just say this, Cindy Kaza and I are back together. We're filming a new series. Shane is also filming a new series for a different network. And so we're all back on TV. We're not working together as a trio right now, but we're hoping that in the future they might have us come back and do a few shock docs about the Holzer Files. And I think that would be great if we could get those opportunities. So don't discount the fact that the Holzer Files are completely dead. But we are filming a new series I'm excited about. And hopefully that'll be out early part of 2022. How about that? So we are filming this new series. I do want to remind people this Friday, though, Tim, September 10th, The Curse of Lizzie Borden is a new shock doc on Discovery Plus and Discovery Plus UK. And I hope that you'll check it out. If you're a fan of the show and you're a fan of the paranormal, please watch it. And I know you may think, but God, there's so much that's already been done about the Lizzie Borden. We are attacking the curse of this story and what went on with it. So we do take it from a different perspective. And I think we capture some really compelling information and evidence that has not been shown before. So I hope you'll check it out. The Curse of Lizzie Borden. It's on Discovery Plus and Discovery Plus UK this Friday, September 10th. So go check that out and email me. Let me know what your thoughts are on it. I appreciate your time and effort. And please also tell your friends, relatives, if you see me post about it on social media, share those posts. Let's get a huge viewing for this and hopefully I'll get some more shock docs. I do have another one coming out in November. It's like the demons of the White House or the ghosts of the White House, something along those lines. They didn't have a finalized word on it. And as soon as I know more about it, I think it's coming out in November. I'll let you guys know about it as well. So that's where we sit. And Tim, I've had a lot of emails of people asking me about another season of Paranormal Night Shift. And I figured I'd just give you a chance to address that now.
Sure. Well, as people know, with the whole COVID epidemic, travel between here and Canada has pretty much been nixed. And that's where they film Paranormal Night Shift. So things have kind of been on hold for right now. We'll let you know when things get fired back up. There's supposed to be a second season of Paranormal Night Shift. So when things get fired up, I'll let you know if I'm involved with that project. And if I am, when things will get fired up and going again. So there you go.
Very cool. We wish you a lot of luck on that. Hope it gets back up and running soon. So Let's get started. So here I am in this undisclosed location, and I'm flipping through the local newspaper, and I'm sure this is probably a syndicated column, but it just caught my attention. It's one of those like Dear Abby or Dear Doctor articles, you know, that you can write in with a specific question and they'll do their best to answer them.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. But the headline caught my attention. Mother's convinced nighttime sounds she hears has a name. I'm like, well, that caught my attention. Let's read it. Well, Dear Dr. Roach, the email begins. I need help with my mother's question. She's 86. She reports hearing glass breaking or being smashed. It's so loud that it actually wakes her out of her sleep. She looks around and never is there a glass broken. She says it's also a loud crashing noise, like something slamming up against a door. This only happens at night in her sleep. She states that it only happens a couple times a year for many years, though. I've told her it's a dream or semi-dream state. She's convinced that there is a specific medical name and explanation for her experience. Her name is Sarah. So I thought that was an interesting take on it, hearing these strange noises at night. Is there a scientific explanation? Well, Dr. Roach responds, Sarah, you were right. This is known as a hypnopompic hallucination. For some people, these hallucinations are visual. For others, they're auditory. They can occasionally be tactile. Your daughter is also right that it is a very dreamlike state, except that it happens only as you wake up. Often, it can be accompanied by sleep paralysis, an inability to move anything for a minute or two, which can be terrifying. About 20% of the population can get this on a rare basis, but people with narcolepsy can get it very often. Since you are having them rarely, it is nothing to worry about. Just be on, you know, be vigil is basically how he's saying here. So I think that's kind of interesting that, you know, they're approaching that in a mainstream newspaper in one of the advice columns. But it's interesting to say I've been woken up to the sound of something loud, booming or banging on my house. And I probably have that happen a couple times a year as well. But here's my question for that. Why are we all hearing the same kind of thing with something booming, banging or crashing? And especially if it doesn't tie into a dream that we were just having, because you would mark that, right? I mean, if I woke up and I remembered having a dream of somebody busting a window or you know, lightning striking the house and creating this loud thunder clap. But why is it that we hear these sounds the same way? And yeah. So many people have reported that across the world.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, that auditory hallucination of a boom or crash. So it makes me wonder if is it a form of our astral projection? Is it kind of an auditory response to our soul coming back to our body? Right? Is it kind of that, you know, and that kind of wakes us up so we think we hear a sound? I don't know. It's weird, but I thought that was a cool little article and a question and answer. So thank you, Dr. Roach, for shedding a little bit of scientific knowledge on us about the hypnopompic states.
I've found something physical when I've heard that, and then I've heard that and had, again, coming out of sleep and had no significant thing tied to it whatsoever. And I've wondered the same thing myself. The one thing we covered where my grandpa's shadow box had been, you know, ripped off the wall and that I was awake for. But in fact, this had happened, I want to say it was 3 weeks ago where I was kind of right on, you know, how you're right on the edge of sleep and you're just about to fall asleep. I heard auditory voices in the living room. Like there had been somebody who had broken into the house and it was like they were discussing what they were going to do with the TV. Like I specifically heard somebody saying something about my television, like what they were going to do with it. I know that seems weird. And then I thought, okay, I better get up. Like, you know,
yeah.
Like it's time to grab the ball bat and go out in the living room and try to do some damage. Not like at my advanced age, I'm going to do any damage,
right.
but I'm thinking, you know, it's time to do the best I can here. And then I did hear like a boom, like somebody had dropped the TV. And I thought for sure that the TV got dropped. So I did grab the bat that's by my bedside and you're going to think this is funny. Then I hopped the one leg on the knee caddy and I wheeled out into the living room and there was nothing there. And it did come from the living room. So
yeah, it's weird.
And it was right at that state when you're firmly just about to fall into sleep. It was right at that precipice. So it weird. It was bizarre. It was just bizarre.
I agree. You know what is so funny? People talk about all this. There's a song, right, that we think of with great love and affection for. And I don't think people paid as much attention to the lyrics of it because it was being sung by, you know, a cut-up green overcoat with boggly eyes. But the song Rainbow Connection from the Muppets, do you realize how supernatural this whole song is?
Oh, very, yeah.
And folks, I'm not just talking about, you know, like Somewhere Over the Rainbow, you know, but listen, it says, here's just some of the lyrics, but it, again, kind of fits a lot of what we're discussing right now. Let's see. I got to get to the right point. Have you been half asleep and have you heard voices? I've heard them calling my name. Is this the sweet sound that calls the young sailors? The voice may be one and the same. You know, like the voices that the sailors would hear that they ascribe to mermaids or other supernatural occurrences. But the whole thing is, you know, the whole song, you know, have you been, or what's the other one? Who said that every wish would be heard and answered when wished on a morning star? Somebody thought of it and someone believed it and look what it's done so far, right? Giving the power of belief. This whole song is very mystical to me. And I think that's why it's been one of my favorite songs my whole life.
Yeah.
But think about that. How many people hear their names? Like I said, I told you a couple months ago, I was woken up to the sound of my daughter screaming for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I went out there and, you know, it turns out she was wide awake and it unnerved her. She was in the bathroom. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, Pacey, are you OK? And she's like, yeah, what are you doing up so late? And I said, honey, I just woke up. You were screaming my name. She goes, no, I wasn't. That's really weird, Dad. She was like uncomfortable about it. And then I went in and checked on my other daughter, Ripley, and she was sound asleep and it wasn't, you know, she hadn't called it out. I said, did you hear Ripley scream? Because the bathroom's closer to Ripley's bedroom.
Yeah.
She goes, no, Dad, I didn't hear anything. But you could just tell in my daughter's voice. It's like at 3:30 in the morning, the last thing she wants to know is that I'm hearing screaming in my house, you know? So very, very strange. Hypnagogic, hypnopompic states, those are in and out of sleep when the dream realm and reality kind of blend together. Does it mean that we're not truly having a supernatural experience? Science, you know, seems to want to believe that it's a more of a hallucinatory effect. But you know, sometimes that's when we have some of our most profound moments. However, it's also when we're most likely to believe that we've been abducted by aliens or come into contact with ghosts, because in that moment, subconscious and conscious reality and dreams are all kind of mashing into this strange realm and can bleed over for a few seconds. So I wish I had a direct answer. It's kind of like my experience in the hospital of seeing things in my room. I was on drugs. There's no doubt about it. But those memories are as clear to me as you visiting and dropping off like crossword puzzle books and, you know, snacks and taunting me with the fact you're eating Portillo's and I couldn't. So, you know, I remember that as much as I remember the ghosts and things that were in my room.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Does being in that different brain set in a more relaxed state elevate consciousness to be able to experience more? That's when we have these dream visitations. And I will tell you, man, I stand by dream visitations. I really do, because they're so profound and different than any other dream you'll ever have. Well, could it be because it's part of the grieving process and we remember it because it's something that's important to us? Possibly. But like in my instance, I was able to actually bring back information I didn't know.
I've had plenty of them and I've delivered information to others that there was just no way I could have known, or I, you know, in specific stuff, not just general stuff. So I'm a believer in them.
Yeah. Very cool. So let's move on. We have some more news stories here. Headline on this one.
Oh, I was going to say, before you get to that, can I just real quick, just an obituary and a quick mention of someone local here who passed away just a couple of days ago.
Sure.
Someone who was actually kind of, I don't want to say formative in my younger years, but a place where I used to hang out quite a bit, Scott Hansen, who's a local comedian, passed away at the age of 66. And he was quite influential in the local comedy scene when I was an up and comer, I guess, when I was a teenager and into my 20s. He was actually influential in Liz Winstead's comedic career, and she was half of the team that formed The Daily Show on Comedy Central. He used to bring in some little known comedian. I don't know if Jerry Seinfeld. I don't know if you've ever heard
not
of him.
Not familiar.
Yeah, he used to bring in little known guys like that into his comedy clubs.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and he was kind of the start of the big time comedy scene in the Twin Cities. Scott was ill for quite some time. He was put into hospice in July, and he'll be missed. He actually went to school with my aunt, he was quite the jokester, and you'll never hear a cross word about Scott. So Godspeed to you, Scott, and you know, see you on the other side, and thank you for all your contributions to the comedy scene in the Twin Cities.
Yeah, just the entertainment scene in general. Amazing guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Louis Anderson, Jerry Seinfeld, so many amazing comics came up through Scott Hansen's comedy clubs and shows. Very crazy. Senators look to continue government-led research into strange UFO sightings. That's the title of this article. Provisions included in the Intelligence Authorization Act for fiscal 2022, which the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence recently passed via a unanimous bipartisan vote, would direct members of the intelligence community to further explore unidentified aerial phenomena, or the modern term for UFOs. The work would build on efforts led by the Defense Department's UAP Task Force, a group formed to study unexplained happenings in the sky registered by military members or sensors. Those involved produced a preliminary assessment of such occurrences for USIC and other government leaders earlier this year. Two longtime advocates for more transparency in the federal UAP pursuits said the IAA inclusions mark some of the many elements needed to ensure America is on top of these sky-based national security concerns. I'm glad that Congress is doing something. My only hope is that it won't be a once and it's over with. There must be an ongoing spending of taxpayer dollars to scientifically look and determine what these things are. Because right now, we don't know. The more we learn, the more we don't know, former Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid of Nevada told NextGov.com. Now, the American people can handle this. I'm not worried about that. What I'm worried about is the government trying to hide the information they get. We need to be transparent, he went on to say. During his time as a top lawmaker, Reid secured millions in funding to back the Pentagon's Advanced Aerospace Threat Identification Program, or AATIP, an unclassified but unpublicized precursor to the UAPTF. AATIP operated for less than a decade, conducting UFO sightings-aligned research before it was disbanded in the mid-aughts, it says here. Ooh, that's very famous, in the mid-aughts. That means the mid-2000s, folks. Reid and former AATIP director Luis Elizondo discussed those prior and existing programs during NextGov's Emerging Tech Summit last week and pointed to the direction that they'd like to see the feds move on going forward. Now, this to me is interesting, Tim, because they're trying to get an allocation of money for continued research. So, again, if we're going to play into the conspiracy angle of this and your belief system, is this a way for them to procure more money telegraphing to China, Russia, and our other superpowers that, hey, we're putting more money into developing the things that we're scaring you with now? And if you think what's happened and what's flying over the skies is amazing, wait till you see what else we're going to get. And they're just directing the money. They're like what's laundering the money through a proposed idea to look into UFOs. Are they instead creating and back-ending more money into creating flight and sky dominance?
Well, yeah, or to simplify it even more, you can only get so much money into the defense budget. This is simply an extension of the defense budget. So you're like you said, you're adding more money to the defense budget by giving money to this program.
We're telegraphing it, right? We're telegraphing it to people that are kind of an interest and a concern at this point in our history.
Yeah, and you do need a bit of a red flag in order to keep adding to the defense budget, because let's face it, and I'm not going to play politics here, but you are pulling out of different nations, and there are really no real wars to fight, so to speak. We're not trying to fight wars right now as a nation. We're kind of becoming an isolationist type state. We're looking towards our own nation and getting our own crap together, so to speak. So the Defense Department needs funding. It's just all there is to it. What better funding than to look to the skies and say we have a potential threat up there? And what better way to procure that funding than to just say, here's this video out there, and we need to fight whatever's up there, because we're vulnerable. So, you know, there you go.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Very strange. Well, representing a state that's home to many UFO sightings, Harry Reid became interested in this topic years ago out of curiosity and leaned into it during his time in the Senate. I wanted to find out if there was anything to this, he explained. The lawmaker worked with Senators Ted Stevens from Alaska and Daniel Inouye from Hawaii, I'm sorry if I butchered that last name, who he said collected dark money in the defense budget to put funds toward government-led scientific studies into the reported sightings. When Reid expressed his aims, Stevens as a pilot in World War II, when an unidentifiable object flew to his left, followed him and his aircraft. When it got low on fuel, Stevens landed and asked the air traffic controller what was flying alongside him, and they had no idea anything had been there. Based on that experience, Reid said the AATIP ask was a very easy sell. Ultimately, the lawmakers were looking to put a hard number to exactly how many people had witnessed the unusual sightings, Reid noted. As it turned out, there were thousands of them. We have counts going back 70 years of people seeing this phenomena. Now it's becoming even more apparent that these unidentified flying phenomena exist. But what are they? We don't know, Reid explained. The more we study, the less we know what they are. But what we do know is that things are developing. See, now there's code to me as well. Things are developing. Observations often included air and watercraft moving at remarkable speeds, Reid said at a military base in the Dakotas. Personnel reported communication systems being shut off when UAPs were observed in the area. The same thing happened to a Navy ship off of the coast of San Diego, Reid noted. So it's something we better stay the hell on top of, because to let it go is not good for the security of our nation. So again, to me, this sounds like telegraphing. I feel like we're putting out a veiled threat to the rest of the world of what we're capable of. Listen, these craft that we know are not Russia or China are turning off our defense systems, are turning off our communication systems. Look at what we're doing. So we show the vulnerability to what it can do to us. We're basically telling Russia and China, we can do this to you. Now, I'm not saying, I want clarity. I still believe we're being visited. I believe we have been visited for a long time. Mm-hmm. I firmly believe that. But I also think we're amping up a security measure here, and we're trying to intimidate other forces by letting them either A, believe this is us, or B, you know, telling them in a roundabout way.
Sure. You're beginning to see the light. By saying this isn't Russia or China, you're de-escalating what may put fear into a lot of people. A lot of people would say automatically, well, why isn't that another superpower that's coming over and turning off our stuff? The government needs to really put it out there that, hey, this is not another superpower. Second, they need to assure people that, hey, that this isn't, although we don't know what this is, we don't think it's this. How else do you showcase your wares than to give it live demonstration of what it does by giving grainy footage? Again, I think grainy footage is just hilarious to me, because there's people that have better footage off their iPhone. or their Android. Let's give props to both companies. You know, there are people that have better footage off their phone than what the U.S. government seemed to have unveiled in this last round of disclosure. So with that being said, you've got to dole out a little bit and give little teases as to these other nations, like you said, that, hey, we may be sitting on some stuff here that you don't want to mess with, knowing that we can do this to quote unquote ourselves. Just think of what we can do to you. Interestingly enough, and I'll just point this out briefly. And this had to do with what President Biden said to the Taliban as they were trying to evacuate Americans out of before the August 31st deadline out of Afghanistan. It was interesting the threat that was put out there, and the threat was this: you won't interfere with what we have to do to get Americans and their allies out of there. Otherwise, we will come in there and act swiftly and do what we need to do. Now, you can, first of all, you're not going to send more troops in there, okay? And I'm not saying they're going to send a big old UFO in there either. Don't get me wrong. But obviously, there's some sort of technology that the U.S. can use to deal with the issue swiftly and then pull people out and get the job done and bring their people home. They don't need to, you know, mess around and get bloody in any more than they have to in the Middle East. You know that, I know that, everybody else knows that. I just find it interesting that the government plays little games, you know, when it comes to we're going to pull out now or we're going to do this now. And if you don't adhere to what we're going to do, then we'll pull out the big guns and you can see exactly what we'll do.
Yeah, I don't know how this is all going to play out. It just seems like there's a lot of chess pieces moving all at once. And it's really bizarre. I'd love to hear from the listeners. And we're not talking politics here.
I'm talking weaponry.
Right. So just you can stop those emails, but send us your emails. What do you think about this? Do you believe that what's coming out is, you know, a gentle admission to UFOs, but more of a veiled threat to our potential enemies, showing them what we're capable of? Or are Tim and I buying into some other crazy form of rhetoric? Do you believe it's simply just the aliens and we're being readied for full disclosure or a visitation coming up? Because I do believe it's either one of those two. Honestly, with the way they're talking about this and the way they're doing it, and they're being more and more progressive and it's being covered by mainstream media in a much more serious way, we're either on the precipice of this holy shit minute where we're going to see and know once and for all we are not alone in this universe, or this is a PR tactic to threaten our enemies or potential enemies. Email me, dave@darknessradio.com. Let me know your thoughts on it.
Like a war game, putting your latest F-15 out there and showing it off to the world. I think that's kind of what we've seen. Like the U.S. has put some of its technology out there,
yeah,
to show its both its allies and its enemies. What we have.
Think about it, too. I mean, just keep in mind, folks, how many of these things are seen around our military installations and nuclear installations? If mm-hmm. it truly was a threat, I think we would be engaging in warlike efforts. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's interesting to me how many of them are seen around our installations. So that, to me, is intriguing, that it might just be our own stuff. And we have to test it over our stuff before we test it over somebody else's, because if we hover and listen, putting it off on the aliens, if they're testing this technology and it sets off a bomb or it sets off a horrible reaction, they have plausible deniability. They can put it on another enemy.
Sure.
We don't know if it's China, Russia, or aliens, but this is what happened to us. you know, which again is a thinly veiled threat to our enemies if it is us, because we're telling the people one thing, we're telegraphing to the rest of the world what we have the capability of doing. And I'm glad that so far it's just been being able to show the capability to shut shit down. Mm-hmm. And I hope it doesn't ever go wrong to where, you know, it sets things off. So we'll have to see how this plays out. It's fascinating. I get excited about it because I really think we're on the precipice of major disclosure of we're all going to see it for ourselves because it's amping up, or, you know, buying into more of the conspiracy that it's our stuff and it has been for a long time. I still think we may have, if it is our stuff, we got it from somewhere. I believe that we, from wreckage or whatever, I think that's what's help us get to this point. So
I honestly think, and I'll keep this very brief, I honestly think if there was alien contact, it happened at Roswell, and I don't think they've been back. I think that if you and I were aliens, okay, and we came across this world with as barbaric as it is, with as much as our people are warmongering and haven't stopped, I wouldn't want to come back to this planet.
Right, but it also might be just an interesting place for them to watch and experiment with. And they're, you know, Rendlesham Forest is still very much on the plate. There's the Canadian Roswell story that is pretty undeniable. There's so many different UFO sightings that are undeniable even since Roswell that I think, you know, are pretty compelling information out there. So I wouldn't be so sure that they've only been here. You know, Roswell was the only crash. Listen, plane crashes are not happening all the time, but they do happen. Yeah. And if we have developed some kind of way to disrupt their flight pattern, we may have found ways to bring them down accidentally that they may have changed so that we can't do that again. But, you know, there have been a few pretty well-documented instances of things crashing and going down. And so it's, I don't know. Like I said, I'd love to hear from the audience on this. Dave@darknessradio.com. Send me a message. Let me know your thoughts of what's going on. We'll take a break in a second. I do have an email. Hi, Dave. And this is weird synchronicity. We were just talking about dream visitations. He says, today I was listening to an old episode of Coast to Coast AM that you were hosting, and you mentioned your grandfather visiting you in a dream. The story you told stuck out to me because I had a similar experience a little over a year ago. I can still remember it very vividly. I was in what felt like a half-awake, half-sleep state, and I felt myself stand up and turn and put my legs off the side of my bed. Yet I could tell my physical body was still laying in bed normally. Next thing I know, I felt like my body was sucked up through a vacuum tube incredibly fast, and I was transported to a warm, open field, similar to the field that you described, which I thought was interesting looking back on the experience now. I'm standing in this field and I feel the warm air and refreshing breeze, and then my childhood dog comes running through the tall grass to see me. I can tell we're both very excited to see each other, and I'm petting him for probably about 30 seconds before I get that feeling where you think you're falling in your sleep, and it's like my soul is thrown back into my body and I wake up. I've heard a lot of people having dream visitations from loved ones, but I've never heard anyone mention pets before and was wondering if you had. I never got to have a proper goodbye with our dog before he passed, so the dream was comforting but seemed all too real. I believe in tons of aspects of the supernatural and paranormal, but try to remain skeptical. I've never had any sort of dream visitation or out-of-body experience before, and I haven't since. So what do you think? Dream visitation or just a vivid dream? Thanks, and that comes from Kirk. Boy, Kirk, I don't know. It's a great story, but listen, and I've explained this in the past, I petted a ghost cat without realizing it was a ghost cat. After my dog passed away, I would feel the dog jump up on the bed. I could feel his breathing pattern as the bed kind of bobbed up and down. When my parents' dog passed away, they would constantly feel Walker, the dog, jump up on the bed, or they could feel the presence of the dog in the bed breathing heavy like it used to. So I do believe that why wouldn't those spirits stay around? They're gentle souls who love us and protect us. So you know, bring us comfort. Why wouldn't they visit us? And if you had a very strong connection, why not? It's interesting. You're right that there wasn't a family member, but I don't know your family dynamic. Maybe you've said enough in life and had a good enough relationship with these people that they didn't need to come back to, you know, connect with you. But the dog that you never got a chance to say goodbye to, maybe that was just his way. Maybe that was his way to come back to you. And he had been around you all these years. Maybe now he's going to launch back into life. And this was his final goodbye to you. I don't know. I wish I had that insight, but it's fascinating nonetheless. Thank you so much for sharing your story with us. All right, let's see what else we have going on here. Got a couple more emails we'll cover. Let me take a quick break. We'll come back. You're listening to the best in paranormal talk radio. This is Darkness Radio. All right, we are back. This is the best in paranormal talk radio, Darkness Radio. You can hear us here all the time. And remember, folks, if you want to hear our show commercial free, go sign up for Stitcher Premium. $5 a month, that's all it is. And you get all of our programming commercial free. Plus, you get full episodes of True Crime Tuesday and Dumb Crime Stupid Criminals at your fingertips, and hundreds of thousands of other hours from all the other podcast shows that are part of the Stitcher Premium Network. So that $5 a month isn't just getting you our show. It gets you all of the shows on the program network. So make sure you go check that out for yourself. $5 a month. Use the code word Darkness Radio. I think it's all one word, and you're supposed to get some deep discount savings on that. So go check it out and sign up now. Here's another email we got, Tim.
All right.
Hey, Dave. Now, don't be offended, Tim. This one's directed me because it's a Holzer Files related story.
I'm not offended at all.
Oh, my God. I'm sorry, buddy. You can hear the brokenheartedness, folks. Why are you so cool to Tim?
I'm not brokenhearted.
Come here, buddy. Sit in my lap. I'll rub your back while I read this story.
I'm good. Right. I'm good.
Hey, Dave. I totally love your new meditation theme. The black tarry substance infused with light works incredibly well. Thank you. For those of you that have no clue what that means, we did some extra bonus episodes where we did a lot talking about intention and manifestation. And at the end of the episodes, I had a couple of experiments. I just did a really well-received program at the Michigan Paracon. And I was really touched by how people reacted to it and the emails I've gotten since. So I'm glad that that worked. But if you want to know more, go back and check some of our bonus Friday episodes. And especially near the end, you'll hear some of these experiments on intention and how to let go of bad things and how to help service yourself through time travel support. That's right. I believe you can help yourself time traveling within your own lifetime mentally to give love and support back to those moments when you were the most vulnerable. So to hear more about it, go check out those episodes or come see me at some of the conventions as I do some more of these intention talks and experiments. Anyway, I've replayed that episode several times. Your interview with Stephanie Milanowski was outstanding and I bought her book. I emailed her, and because I mentioned hearing her on your podcast, she gave me a free reading. It was 2 hours. She helped me with the situation, and I'm very grateful. In fact, I mentioned something to her that happened the night I watched the Holzer Files Mystery Hill episode. She had such a strong reaction that I thought I would tell you, hoping to let it go. As I watched the episode, I really got excited because I had been there as a child. I paused the show, and I tore through a box of old photos, and I found Polaroids from about 1977 or 1978. I remember shooting in very low light just before they closed for the day with my one step, and my 11 or 12 year old self was so psyched to be there and see the sun setting and the pointed stones. My parents thought it was cool, and it was across the New Hampshire border from central Massachusetts where we lived. It was a spontaneous excursion and very enjoyable. Well, after your episode, I tweeted it out with the found photos. And it was cool. I went to sleep. All was well. Mystery Hill has always intrigued me, not really scared me. So during the night, I woke up and I saw a scary cloaked older man standing in my room. He was gray skinned, almost bluish. He was insanely intense, very angry. He was standing like 5 feet away from my bed, black cloak with the hood up and his eyes shining. He was between a window and a large oval antique mirror. He was holding a ball of swirling light. And he mocked me, pretending to throw it at me. I scrambled back in my bed toward the headboard while reaching for the light, knowing I needed full light. I switched on the light and poof, he was gone, just like that. My heart was thundering. It was a horrific experience, like beyond a nightmare. Stephanie told me she would call that a visitation. The word druid came to me in the morning. I don't know anything about druids, so not sure what it's all about, but I would have thought sorcerer, that son of a bitch. That's what he said in this art in the letter. Anyway, Stephanie really helped me out on another matter, and I appreciate your show with Tim very much. There you go, Tim. See, you got some love and recognition there.
Yeah.
Devastating news about Holzer Files. It was unique and meaningful. Onward and upward, though. You have a ton of fans, and we will watch whatever you produce. Thanks for letting me share this. I changed my room all around, and he has not returned. LOL. Good riddance. Have a great week. And that comes from Christine Peterson. Well, thank you, Christine Peterson. I'm glad that you made a connection, and I'm glad that our show has helped you make a connection as well. So thank you very much for sharing that with me. We got some more news here. We got a lot from Europe lately, man. It's been hopping over in Europe.
Yep.
With strange supernatural occurrences. A UK jail paranormal manager says that possessions do happen, but just not like you see in the movies. All right. Well, let's see what this article shows us. Possessions do happen at a prison dubbed one of the most haunted places in England, but they're not like in the movies, its paranormal manager has said. Kristen Honey, age 49, says paranormal activity at the historic Bodmin Jail in Cornwall is a regular occurrence. She has been working at the prison cum hotel since 2015 and studies paranormal activity at the 18th century lockup. As part of her job, she delivers after dark experiences where she helps visitors experience paranormal phenomena. Phenomena, Tim.
That's the wrong one.
Yeah, that sounds like the Flash Gordon theme.
I thought I had the right one up. Let's see.
Nope. We'll get another chance at it, I'm sure. She believes possessions do happen at the jail, but not in the way that they're depicted in films. I don't know that that's good business that you admit that people come there and get possessed. She told Cornwell Live, possession is real, and I'm not talking about demonic possession. From our perspective, possession is a very different case to how you would see it in the movies, for instance. What you see on films, I'm not saying isn't real. There are demonic possessions that do happen in this world, and they're very, very, very difficult to manage. Bodmin Jail has not been a working prison since 1927. Kirsten says possession can look like a sudden change in someone's behavior or faintness. She added, possession at Bodmin Jail is a submersion of energy fields. You're overwhelmed. You're overcome by a sense of change or atmosphere for you, or a complete change in personality. You get a distancing from yourself. It can have a dramatic effect on people. It can actually be quite traumatic in a sense. Although they recover very, very quickly, you definitely have that impact. You know possession has happened to you. The jail was designed by Sir John Call, built in 1779, and was operational for 150 years, in which it saw over 50 public hangings and executions. It was the first British prison to hold prisoners in individual cells and is considered to be one of the most haunted places in England, according to paranormal hunters. Kirsten added, on a regular basis, we have touching, feeling, poking, having hands held on to people, people talking to you, and noises that are just out of the blue that can't be placed with anything physical. There's so much that happens here at the Bodmin Jail. The word paranormal for us means anything that's not normal within your day-to-day life. Anything that comes across as something that's not explainable, something that doesn't happen frequently, something that is really obscure, and you just cannot place scientifically or personally. That would fall under paranormal for us, working within the paranormal spectrum. The prison closed in 1927, but reopened as a tourist attraction, offering ghost tours, and even as a hotel. Kirsten added, I kind of thought you would have the odd moment and the odd shadow. What I didn't expect was full-on paranormal activity. Interaction at its greatest, being held onto, being hugged, being told a story, being actually spoken to in real time, hearing and seeing this poltergeist-like activity. Bodmin Jail has a phenomenal reputation for being the most haunted place in England, and it upholds that reputation very nicely. I don't really have to try. That's the easy part of my job, she says. I don't know. If you're being told possession of some sort happens on the regular, would you go to a place like that?
I probably tend to stay away from it. Yeah,
I would have a concern that, okay, if something there can affect me psychologically, physically, and personally, does it really leave you when you leave there? I don't know. That it would be interesting to hear if people have had these kind of experiences and did it follow them? I don't know. I did get a couple of emails from our friends over in Europe, Tim, and they say, hey, Dave, keep up the great job of totally mispronouncing every city, province, town, and English word known to man. And they get quite a kick out of it. So I'm glad that I can bring entertainment in many different ways, Tim.
Just a little round of applause for the great job you do.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah. Two of the most popular Nottingham landmarks are believed to be haunted by ghosts and dead spirits, according to a paranormal activity investigator. As a matter of fact, this article has many different videos to go along with it, so you can go check it out at darknessradio.com. Click on that news tab, and you'll find this week's news. Visitors would not miss the chance to explore the National Justice Museum or Robin Hood experience when they arrived to the city. I've been to both. Very cool locations. Ghost believers, however, say there's more to these two tourist hotspots than just the fascinating history. Adam Bird, founder of Nottingham Ghost Investigations Team, crowned the National Justice Museum the most haunted place in the county, with Robin Hood experience coming to a close second. The 38-year-old has led hundreds of investigations in the city of Nottinghamshire, visiting private and public locations since 2003. He said he has always had a passion for observing paranormal activity and started to see ghosts' presence when he was only a child. I used to see things as a child because I grew up in a haunted house myself, Adam said, so I've always been intrigued by the subject. The investigation team now has seven members who have already investigated countless properties across the years. In modern days, ghost hunters and investigators like Adam use professional equipment and run complex investigations to determine if a property is haunted or not. Adam went on and explained, before we actually do any investigating itself, we visit the location or the home. We first interview the people who live there, and we go into details about what they've seen and experienced. We also create what we call baseline tests, where we check the electromagnetic frequencies of the area. The first thing we really try to do is find a natural explanation before we assume that it is something paranormal. If the electromagnetic frequencies are particularly high, well, that could explain why people are seeing and hearing things. So once with all the baseline tests and things like that, that's when we go in and investigate. We visited the National Justice Museum 10 years ago, and I can say that is the most haunted place we have ever been to in Nottinghamshire. The Robin Hood experience is also very close to it. There's a lot of paranormal activity in there. That is when Adam and other investigators spend their night inside the property with cameras ready to capture any paranormal activity. Footage provided by the Nottingham Ghost Investigations team has captured moments when objects appear to move without being touched and mysterious shadows moving about in the dark. Gary Holmes, general manager at the National Justice Museum and no relation to fictional character Sherlock Holmes, in case you were curious, Tim, has been working at the popular city landmark now for 25 years. He said he is no stranger to experiencing strange goings on at the museum and has witnessed strange episodes over the years. Mr. Holmes added, my experiences here range from physically seeing things move in front of me to hearing strange voices coming from empty rooms. The more recent we have had was obviously through lockdown. The building was very much sort of asleep for the majority of the times when I was coming in. Most of the time just on my own, just making sure that the systems and the building itself were remaining intact. During that time, it was quite a lot of strange noises and strange activity going on. He tried to capture the paranormal activity on camera, but with no success. However, he is not the only one admitting that the museum is filled with strange presences. Regional, national, and even international teams of investigators that spent the night inside looking for ghosts over the years have claimed that the place is definitely haunted, Mr. Holmes recollects. He said, I'm very much a skeptic. I mean, I certainly was before. I've witnessed and experienced all of the paranormal episodes. Yeah. I would say I definitely believe that there's something, some kind of energy, whether or not you call it ghostly experiences or hauntings. I think the building itself has an energy, and that it's all the investigators, even from other countries, visitors, and everyone that has said and seen things here. There has been a lot of misery and a lot of suffering here. There is probably a lot of tormented souls that have been processed through this building, so it is bound to have that sort of energy. It is going to sort of reside within the building, so to speak. It is never going to go away, and it's always going to possess whatever it encounters. That sort of atmosphere of doom and gloom, suffering and pain, shall remain forever. Although we are living the modern lifestyle and we don't hang people anymore, there is a reason why that sort of energy just does not dissipate and go away. It is within the walls, the floors, and the courtrooms that we have got here, and it makes the building sort of still live and breathe.
Ooh, Commander!
Do tell. Similar paranormal activity has been observed at the Robin Hood Experience Museum in Friar Lane. Batteries drain here when someone comes in, and they even recharge themselves as soon as people leave, it's believed. Now, Adam Sinclair Greenwood, owner of the tourist attraction, said, "We are a very popular venue for ghosts and spirits, and paranormal investigation teams have always had a good experience when they visited. The alleged spirits mess around with electrical objects and cause a lot of trouble with our push-up button systems. But it is part of the charm of this place," he added. "Things move when they should not, and taps get turned on," Adams admits. He said, "It is after the character of the place, I would say. I think any old property would have had those things happen. This building dates from the 1700s, and there is a medieval cave underneath it, showing there has been another building on the site since probably 1,000 years earlier. It would be almost surprising if it was not haunted." Quite. Yes, I get the people from England that mock me for totally butchering their imaginary town names. First of all,
yeah.
I'm not butchering them. I'm reading them as they're written. It's not my fault that Nottinghamshire is Nottinghamshire, because that's not how it's written. You'd think the English would know English, Tim.
Right.
God's sakes.
Wiggledy piggledy do sure is not a town.
No.
No.
Seriously, I think they threw darts, right? It's like, here in school glasses amplifier, sure. What the shit? None of those things even go together.
Right.
Hogspaw Doctow Soup Village. You don't believe me. Just look up crazy ass names in England.
Ooh, wait.
Fartonshire.
Ooh, I'm going to do that. Hold on a second.
Yeah, you should.
Yeah.
Here's an interesting article I like. It comes from SciPost, Tim. SciPost. And I'm not talking like supernatural sci. Listen to the headline of this. Dark personality study finds that religious belief predicts reduced psychopathy, but increased sadism. New research has found that some dark personality traits are associated with religious and paranormal belief. The study published in the Journal of Humanistic Psychology sheds light on how different types of personalities are related to different types of supernatural beliefs. "I've always been interested in the supernatural, and while I was a student, I realized it was something I could research. I wanted to find out why people believe in different things, and if people who believed in other things had different personalities or thought in different ways," said study author Malcolm Schofield, a lecturer in psychology at the University of Derby, or Derby, Tim, because that's how they say D-E-R-B in England.
Derby.
And the editor of the Journal of the Society for Psychical Research. In the study, 199 adults completed online assessments of narcissism, Machiavellianism, psychopathy, sadism, belief in supernatural phenomena, and belief in science. The researchers found that participants with higher levels of religious beliefs tended to have lower levels of psychopathy, but higher levels of sadism. Right, because obviously we're sadistic to talk to people that are non-believers because of all the abuse we'll take, Tim. That's a no-brainer.
Right, yeah.
Religious belief was the type of belief that was most certain and certainly and clearly predicted by the dark, treaded personality traits, with 7% of the variants explained, they wrote in their study. In other words, those who agree with statements such as "religion gives meaning to my life" were slightly less likely to agree with statements like "I feel justified in doing anything I can get away with to succeed," but slightly more likely to agree with statements like "I enjoy humiliating others." See, I have a hard time believing people answer those properly. Because even if they're anonymous, psychopaths, sociopaths, narcissistic personalities, they probably don't realize what assholes they are. Right? So are they going to say, "Oh, yes, I enjoy destroying people. I enjoy making them feel bad"? Or are they thinking that they're empathetic? I don't know. Or are they chameleonizing like Dexter from the serial killer, right? Trying to fit in. So they're going to answer in ways that think are sociologically acceptable. So I don't know that I believe these studies.
You've got to think in even more minutia. They're going to answer the way that they think you're going to want to hear.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
The findings indicate there is a difference in people's personality depending on whether or not they hold religious beliefs or paranormal beliefs, Schofield told SciPost. While particular beliefs might be associated with dark personality traits, the reasons for this can be complex. For example, religious believers being linked to sadism could be a result of a belief in a just world where people believe others get what they deserve. Belief in science, on the other hand, was not positively or negatively correlated with any of the dark treaded traits. You could be a dispassionate or philanthropic scientist. Either are just as likely, the researcher said. Of course, not everyone with strong religious beliefs is a sadist. The findings represent small differences between groups, and the correlation nature of the data prevents the researchers from drawing any firm conclusions about cause and effect. While the study indicates that some dark personality traits are linked with certain types of belief, it does not mean that believing in a particular thing is bad, Schofield said. However, it might indicate that people use beliefs to justify why they have a particular personality trait. The study included participants who identified as atheist, agnostic, Christian, Muslim, nun, and spiritual, but cross-cultural aspects of different beliefs need to be addressed more. And a study examining these more closely would be helpful, Schofield said. The study, Tales from the Dark Side, the Dark Triad of Personality, Supernatural, and Scientific Belief, was authored by Malcolm B. Schofield, Ben L. H. Roberts, Caroline A. Harvey, Ian S. Baker, or Ian, if we're going to go with the hoity-toity, and Gemma Crouch. That sounds like a Harry Potter character.
Yeah.
Gemma Crouch. Very cool. We do have this article up as well, and there is a link to that study at the bottom of the article, so you can click the link and go read the article and the study for thyself, Tim.
Dave, if you didn't indulge me for just a brief moment.
No, but of course.
I have a very long list of rude and funny English village and place names in England. I just would like to name a few.
Please, please do.
All right. A cock's green in Worcestershire.
What?
A cock's green.
A cock's green. Yes.
Yes. There's Beaver Close.
Yes.
Broadbottom in Cheshire.
Yes. Broadbottom Girls. Isn't that a song by The Queen?
Yeah. Yes. 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 Cock and Take in Staffordshire.
See, they're so naughty in Europe.
They are. This whole list is just disgusting. Fudge Pack upon Humber.
Get out of here.
No, serious. It's an Umber side. It's Fudge Pack upon Umber. Of course, don't forget, if you're going to really impress her, go to Golden Balls in Oxfordshire. Just saying. You've got Jolly's Bottom in Cornwall. I'm trying to keep it as PG as I can, because there's really some bad ones like Lickfold in West Sussex.
Oh my God.
Lickfold. Yes. I can't say that one. I'm going to hold off on that one. Shittington in Bedfordshire.
I'm sure it's Shitington, Tim. But of course, shite is poop over there anyway, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah. There is the edge. The really bad F word is of course over there too. The one that we can't say that is a cigarette over there.
Oh yes.
Yeah, that one's
FAG is what they refer to cigarettes over there.
Don't forget about Dave, the French Lecoq in Wiltshire.
Jesus. Lecoq. Wasn't that a great 70s disco band?
It was. They had some funky tunes over there. Mm-hmm. They really did. Of course, If you like it dry, you also like the wet wang. Yeah, you like the wet wang in East Yorkshire. So,
oh my God.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You really do. You really do.
I think we got enough on that. But now tell me, folks, how bad I am for misrepresenting or misinterpreting these town names. You just heard a handful.
Dave, one last one.
Okay.
One last one. Scotland needs to be included in here too. They have a little mountain over there, although it's not little, but it is the Bastard. So there you go.
Yes. Yep. There you go.
That's just a brief encapsulation. I really should send you this link so we can put it up on the website.
Okay. Shoot it over to me. I will. Yeah. We'll include it with the news. Yeah. You can go see these crazy ass names. And those were just the filthy ones. Otherwise, there are like these these weird, like, mitten, you know, mitten bull cockinsure. It just, you know, it doesn't make any sense. Yeah. I don't get it.
There you go.
All right. So, Tim, pull your shekels together.
Okay.
Because the Ensslin Haunted Mansion has gone on the real estate market for the first time ever in upstate New York.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. Located on a main street, the beautiful landmark, the Ensslin Mansion, has an eclectic history. The protective ghost of a young man who passed away, the spirit of a wife pushed down a flight of stairs to her death, and the specter of a grandfather who still haunts his ancestral mansion. Any one of these would make a home verifiably haunted. The home was previously used as a supper club in the 1920s, entertaining many legendary guests, including Jack Legs Diamond and a few other well-known celebrity guests. Well, if they had other well-known, why wouldn't they have given us more than Jack Legs Diamond? Right. The Ensslin Mansion in Troy, New York, has all these spirits and more. Historical information. Built in 1890, the home was purchased by Friedrich Anthony Fail in 1919 after he and his wife arrived from Bavaria. The home was consistently been in the family's hands. Present owner, award-winning screenwriter, author, and great-granddaughter uses the home as an inspirational muse. Multiple paranormal teams have been through the house and each had significant experiences. The mansion has been filmed for TV locations such as TLC, The Learning Channel, and Discovery ID, as well as several movies. Additionally, they list other things that you can look up on in this article, so I'll skip that. Six generations have lived in the pristine home. The historical gem is the perfect location for a pop-up restaurant, artisanal cafe, or artisanal coffee roaster. Two floors of living space and an unattached carriage house with two-car garage. This home offers creative and eclectic opportunities in the heart of Lansingburg. Probably butchering that too. New roof, porch, electric, two-car garage ready for a cute setup. The house is filled with custom design, Florentine original doors, four fireplaces, and wide, spacious hardwood floors. So, Tim, if you're looking for a house like this, mm-hmm. and let me pull it up and see how much it costs, shall I?
Oh, sure. I probably can't afford
shit.
It. But
that, no. Holy cow. That is really affordable, actually.
Really?
It's only $444,444.
Oh, is that it?
I would have thought for this it would have been a lot more expensive, especially such a historic site.
Yeah.
Right? And one that's obviously they've used it for film, they've used it for TV shows. So you know, if you continue to make that house available for ghost hunts, private and public, and make it available to production companies, filming sites, you probably pay back that in a couple of years.
Hmm.
That's a really good value. Shit, I would consider buying that.
Hmm.
I mean, if I had money.
Yeah.
And it wasn't just on reality TV and a podcast, Tim.
Yeah.
Yeah. But if we scrape our money together, we've got at least a down payment on a down payment.
Well, there's that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I've got payment on a down payment on a down payment on a down payment on a down payment.
Yeah. So about 25 bucks you've got available right now.
Yeah, about that. Yeah.
Well, you know, when you think of Colorado, Tim, obviously we think of the Stanley Hotel, one of the most famous places. And there's a handful of Colorado hotels besides the Stanley Hotel mm-hmm. where it's claimed you can go stay with spirits and have a paranormal experience. Now, horror writer Stephen King and Jack Nicholson made Estes Park Stanley Hotel world famous destination for travelers and ghost hunters alike who want to, you know, like to have a little spookiness built into their state. But Colorado has a deep history in mining towns, making yesteryear's bars, brothels, and theaters, and even crime of passion murder scenes into modern day hotels. Some are pricier, like Denver's Brown Palace Hotel and Hotel Colorado in Glenwood Springs, while others come at a bargain of a price through Airbnb, like the Black Monarch of Victor, but all reportedly have a rich paranormal presence. Here's five of them, Tim. The haunted Colorado hotels that aren't the Stanley, all right? The Black Monarch Hotel in Victor. The Black Monarch Hotel was once a turn-of-the-century brothel. While it no longer offers those services, allegedly, you can book a stay in the Victorian Gothic-style hotel through Airbnb for less than 100 bucks a night. While it's full of creepy oddities and taxidermy, legend has it the building is also haunted by the ghost of a miner, Tim. No, not a child. Like, you know, guys that would mine.
Yeah.
Then there's the Brown Palace Hotel in Denver. No, this hotel is not haunted by Molly Brown herself. But according to Uncovered Colorado, over the years, visitors have said that they've seen the palace's carpet appear to be crawling. There was also a crime of passion committed at the hotel's marble bar in the early 1900s, and it's believed those souls are still present. Oh, those two aren't scary enough, Tim. How about the Clarion Hotel?
Ooh, boo kids.
Yeah, in downtown Greeley. The Clarion may not have mining town history, but Greeley locals say that there's some paranormal activity within the walls of the hotel on 8th Street and 8th Avenue. The hotel is where a historic theater used to be, and legend has it that Rosie is a turn-of-the-century ghost who's still seen hanging around. In 2003, the Greeley Tribune ran an article about the hotel's ghost encounters, including the ghost on the third floor. And employees run in fear, stating that they don't want to work alone, and some never even want to come back. Then you've got the Gold Miner Hotel in Nederland. Up in the mountains outside of Boulder is the historic gold miner built in 1897. The hotel looks just as it did 120 years ago because it's furnished with antiques and a few spirits. You can read about a few haunting experiences in the article, so I'll have this up again. Just go to darknessradio.com, click on the news tab, you'll see this, and then when you scroll through this article, you'll see another link that they give you to go dig into some of the deeper stories. And finally, the Hotel Colorado in Glenwood Springs. Built in 1890s, it has it all: crimes of passion, a history of a former morgue, apparitions of a man named Walter. And you can read a lot about those ghostly experiences through the article as well. Then there's Red Rocks in Morrison, Colorado. Red Rocks is most visually stunning venue in the U.S. And if legends are true, one of the most haunted. A 2016 piece for 303 magazine details several spirits who supposedly stalk the outdoor space. The most famous is the Hatchet Lady, who lives in a cave in the rock's shadow and may appear naked with an axe to dismember naughty children. Naked, woman, axe. Tim's, there's your date for this Halloween.
Sounds like a plan to me.
There's the Phoenix Theater in Petaluma, California. In 2014, Tom Gaffrey, longtime manager of the Phoenix Theater in Petaluma, California, which this has nothing to do with Colorado. I don't know why we suddenly made this jump. Uh-huh. Has unexplained phenomena that he's experienced, including random phone calls and voices from within the otherwise empty building and several ghosts. He's even given them names like Little Kid, Big Chris, and the Lady in the Bathroom. Real original names there, buddy. And he's not the only one that's seen ghosts. They've been verified by psychics and other paranormal experts and a security guard for Guar, who asked who that little kid back there is at the exit in the middle of the show. The guard walked out after no one could find the boy. So there's other stories from around the world, other places you can check into as well in this article, including First Avenue from Minneapolis. So I'll put this whole article up. You can go check it out for yourself. Pretty cool little site and article to check into. Let me see here. We've also got a story of a former Playboy model, Tim. We talked a little bit ago about ghosts of animals.
Yep.
Well, Bridget Marquardt has a story to share, and she did recently on one of her programs. A former Playboy model has claimed she can hear the ghost of her dead dog running around her house. Since leaving the Playboy mansion back in 2013, Bridget Marquardt has gone on to become an avid ghost hunter and says she is using her passion for the paranormal to make contact with her dog, Winnie, who passed away recently. Relaying the story to paranormal investigator John E.L. Tenney on her podcast, Ghost Magnet, Bridget recounted how she thinks Winnie is communicating with her. She even explained, even though I kept her groomed, her nails would still get stuck in the carpet a little bit, and you'd hear it go click, 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 sometimes like Velcro on the carpet when she walked by. And sometimes I think I'll hear that, and I think, oh, it's just the cat. And I sit up, and the cat's asleep on the end of my bed, and I'm like, wait, that's no cat. So maybe I'm getting signs, but I really want something that's concrete where I'm like, well, that's definitely her. Bridget's guest, John, agreed that there is a strong possibility that she heard the ghost of her dog. He suggested people say, do animals have ghosts? We are animals. I know we think of ourselves as human beings and we try to set ourselves apart from them. But hell, we're animals too, John E.L. Tenney says. If we have ghosts, and of course they have ghosts. Of course they have spirits that persist. And I have to agree, man, if you've ever had a pet, a dog, a cat, a bird, they have souls, they have spirits, they're so loving and affectionate. How could they be nothing more than just a automaton, right? That just this like robotic creature that allows you to pet it and feed it. It has to have a soul because of the caring and kindness. And I know Tim's going to have a hard time believing that cats are caring and kind, but mine always take care of me. When I'm in a bad mood, depressed, sick, whatever, they gather around me, collect me, they kiss, they cuddle, they snuggle. So I don't know if they're just waiting to see if I'm going to end my own life so they can eat me. But they do seem to be very affectionate.
It's tenderizing. It's called tenderizing, Dave. They're you know, that thing where they kind of put their paws on you.
They lick you to see if you're ready to chomp on yet.
It's tenderizing and kind of testing you to see if your saltiness is ready. And they're pretty much getting ready to eat you.
The love that they shared with us and that we shared with them, it's intangible, and their body might go away, but the love that they give us is with us forever. And what I find intriguing about this article is that they choose to show throughout the entire article no pictures of animals, no pictures of ghosts, just pictures of Bridget in a bikini over and over, different poses and such.
Well,
that's a good way to objectify her instead of talking about the reality of the deeper subject she's referring to. Well done, Daily Star.
Yeah.
Jackasses. Come on. Stop objectifying, for God's sakes. We get it. She was once a Playboy model. She's more than that. During her time as a Playboy model, the article goes on, Bridget starred in The Girls Next Door, a reality TV series that focused on the lives of the women who lived with Playboy owner Hugh Hefner. She now hosts podcast Ghost Magnet, which she interviews guests from the world of the paranormal. I was on her show, I think last year, and we're working right now to try to get her on our show and have a conversation. She wants to come on and join. It's just been trying to find time that both of our schedules will work out together. Let me see here. I thought I had another email. This one starts off. It's from New Zealand, straight up. So I'm going to tell you, I'm going to butcher this. Kia Ora, Dave and Tim.
Yeah.
Kia Ora. I don't know. Here's another international fan to add to your world listings. I am from and live in New Zealand. I have been enjoying your podcast for some time now. It makes up for the fact that our country still does not have access to Discovery Plus. Thankfully, we've had a few paranormal shows on TV, including Your Good Self with the Holzer Files series, only one. I know, we're so deprived. New Zealand is a stunning country, which is also full of its well-known haunted locations. Its melting pot of history goes back from when the Maori landed on our shores to more recent times when mainly British settlers came over, followed by many other cultures. It's cute that they call them British settlers. We call them ex-convicts and prisoners, right? Wasn't that where they sent them to Australia, New Zealand to get them out of Britain?
They're prisoners.
Yeah, we call those settlers. That's a very PC way to handle it, I guess. While I binge listening to the last couple days of podcasts, and laughing a lot with you, especially regarding pronunciations of English towns and cities, you brought up a place which is familiar to both my husband and I, the town of St. Helens, Merseyside. Or is it Merseyside? This became my home for many years. While I lived in England, I met my husband, made close lifelong friends and people I call family, including the man I call my dad. One place I am very familiar with is the old naval barracks. The building has been hired for many uses, including dog training. And around 12 years ago, we took our young black Labrador pup to classes there. At that time, it wasn't commonly known to be a haunted hotspot, which it is today. Having paranormal shows such as Paranormal Lockdown UK with Nick and Katrina certainly did give it an added spotlight. There were a couple of instances, which at the time I brushed off, but might indeed have potentially had some paranormal merit to it. The first was before we started class. We would all cram into a small space leading to the main hall. On quite a few occasions, my pup would become fixated, looking up the stairs at a certain point in the area we were waiting. He would often bark, sometimes bow to play and jump about. At the time, I thought nothing more of it. Pups often do crazy things, right? But now I wonder if he was seeing more. It was believed that three-legged ghost dog Bruce, who haunts the building, was also a black lab. Maybe Pango, my pup, was interacting with Bruce. There was a feeling you'd get when in the hall that you were being watched. It didn't happen every time. A few canine parents felt it. But again, we joked about it was a ghost and continued to keep focusing on training our pups. Anywho, thanks again, you two, for always having such great podcasts, which I always find insightful, interesting, educational, especially concerning the science, theory of all things paranormal, as well as entertaining. Maybe one day, once this horror show that is a pandemic is manageable, I'll be able to attend one of your amazing events, as we have nothing like that on our small isles. Thank you. Take care. That comes from Bex. Thank you, Bex. Very sweet.
Mm-hmm.
Very nice. She mentioned both of us, Tim. There you go. Boom.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you feel better? A little better?
I didn't feel bad to begin with.
Buddy, you don't have to deny. Just open your heart to me. Let me in. Let me in. Let me into you. Just want to be inside you, Tim, to help you. You know, I want to let me into your heart, into your soul, into your mind so that I can comfort you, Tim. That's all I'm saying.
Okay.
Yeah. We're going to go to Long Island, Tim, where Huntington native Carrie Ann Flanagan Broski has spent years investigating and writing about the history of Long Island. But in her newest book, the award-winning author received help in telling those stories, help from the ghosts of the island's past. Each chapter of Broski's new book, Haunted Long Island Mysteries, brings the reader to a different historic location to learn about its past and hear from people who continue to tell their stories, even after death. This book in particular has some really spiritual stories along with teaching about local history, Broski said. And what better way to teach that local history than through ghost stories? Broski said her book, which is her fourth book about paranormal activity on the island, includes transcriptions of communications with spirits in many historical locations, such as the Long Island Maritime Museum, Miller Ridge Inn in Jericho, and Lakeview Cemetery in... I don't know how to say it, Tim. P-A-T-C-H-O-G-U-E. Pachago. Pachagui?
Pachogue?
Let's go. Yeah, Pachogue, maybe. You and your fancy learning. Broski remembers the first time she experienced a ghost communicating with her by electronic voice phenomena through a recorder in 2006 after meeting paranormal investigator and medium Joe Giaquinto at one of her history lectures following the release of her books on the history of Huntington. He taught her about electronic voice phenomena, and they worked together to investigate the paranormal at a historic location on the island. Soon afterward, Broski was transcribing an interview she conducted in a home in Huntington with the residents who had paranormal activity in their past home due to objects they had from around the world. She was shocked to find the recorder she used to catch the interview on tape had picked up additional voices, one of them from the other side. It was as if someone pulled the recorder up toward her mouth, and it was a little girl who said, "Hold me," Broski said. From that point on, I knew it was possible to communicate with ghosts. The experience and others like it led to her first book on the paranormal titled Ghosts of Long Island, Stories of the Paranormal. While investigating for her new book, Broski and Giaquinto used a ghost box, a transistor radio that continues to scan stations, allowing spirits to communicate through spoken words via the white noise. "We treat them like people because they are people. They are people that crossed," she said. "Because of how we treat them, we end up getting amazing responses." In an interaction Broski wrote about in her new book, she had finished interviewing Denise Shepherd, director at the Oyster Bay Historical Society at the Earl Whiteman House. Broski and Giaquinto were recording with the ghost box and asking the spirits questions about a woman who may have been killed in the house. "I asked, does the woman who killed herself in the house stay here?" And the spirit said, "Of course." Broski remembered, Denise said, "Did she kill herself or did someone kill her?" The spirit said, "It's possible." Another spirit said, "Yes." And another spirit said, "Killed her." Denise said, "Hi, spirits, did somebody kill her?" And the spirits clearly said, "Yes." As a professional photographer, Broski takes her own photos for her books. She has caught apparitions in her photos, which she believes to be energies connected to spirits. We're going to try to have her on the show here. I'd love to hear some more of these stories and availability. You can find that book online on Amazon. And when we have her, I'll have it directly linked into our Amazon gift shop, if you will. Hey, Tim, Nessie's back in the news.
Oh.
Uh-huh. It's the latest viewing. Nessie Hunter has claimed to have captured images of Loch Ness Monster swimming in the water while using high-tech equipment. Alleged sightings of the legendary beast have soared in the past few months, and one tourist believes he has proof of Nessie in the loch. The last spotting marks the third sighting of the Loch Ness Monster this summer. Brandon Scanlon, who has been named by the official Loch Ness Monster Sightings Register, claims to have recorded a sound image of a creature rumored to be 3 to 4 meters. That's around 9 to 13 feet long for those of us in the Americas, Tim.
Oh, yeah.
This creature was seen below the waves. Edinburgh Live reports Mr. Scanlon was traveling on the Nessie Hunter vessel used to ferry passengers on journeys around the loch. It comes after a number of reported sightings in July and August purporting to be alleged plesiosaur. According to the Register, during the latest sighting on August 26, Benjamin Scanlon was on holiday with his family and took a trip on the Nessie Hunter of Loch Ness Cruises. He spotted something on the sonar of the boat and caught the image. Captain Mike of the boat estimated it to be 3 to 4 meters in length at a depth of about 20 meters, while the boat was in water about 40 meters deep. Plesiosaur typically grew to a length of around 11 feet, according to fossil records, placing its size right in the middle of the captain's estimate. Recent sightings have included a Mr. Veacock. I said Veacock, Tim.
Oh, right, yeah.
Yeah, claiming to have seen an unidentified creature rise 2 feet from the water before descending back into the peaty depths while on holiday late last month. In another incident, a father and daughter claimed to have seen Nessie moving through the water while hiking nearby. There's images and information on that if you go check out our website at darknessradio.com. Click on that news tab and you'll find more information there. What else have we got going on here? Oh, a UFO mystery in the daytime sky suddenly moves in a jaw-dropping video. And yeah, we have that video up on our site. Where, Tim?
Darknessradio.com. Did you just say jaw-dropping?
Yeah, jaw-dropping. I'm bass backwards today.
Okay.
In a jaw-dropping video.
Okay.
Good Lord.
Okay.
Yeah. It's a drag getting old, man. I think it's the altitude of the area I'm in. I can't tell you exactly where it is, Tim, but there are big skies here, and I feel like I'm up in them.
New York City?
No.
Okay.
I get very winded up here.
Okay.
Families say they were spooked when the road trip turned into a UFO encounter as a star unexpectedly appeared in the sky and then rapidly started to move. Jay Mitchell was driving his wife and daughter near the U.S. city of Keokuk, Iowa, when they caught sight of a presence hanging in the air. His videoed an unexplained encounter and says even his daughter is convinced it's aliens. It's a cute video. You can hear the kids. Are those aliens? And the mom's like, no, they're not aliens. He said, we noticed it in the sky because it was a huge, bright star. And we thought it was odd that there was a bright star shining during the daytime. It was not moving for a few minutes, but we started filming it when it began moving across the sky. In the video of the encounter, Jay's 6-year-old daughter can be heard asking if they were looking at aliens. The child's mother tries to reassure her that no, that's not it. But the parents are stuck for answers themselves. They ponder aloud if it could be a drone or a plane, but neither is sure. When the mother's like, I think it's a drone. And he goes, yeah, there's drones in Keokuk, Iowa. The military's hotbed of activity. Jay, who lives in Hamilton, Illinois, is still uncertain about exactly what they saw in the sky. However, he's convinced it wasn't a plane, saying, all for what it was, I'm not sure. It definitely was not a plane, the dad added. It was a few hundred yards in the sky and too low for a large plane. I'm still unsure exactly what it was, but it was very big and very bright. And if there is a prosaic explanation, Jay is not the only one who's failed to discern it. After sharing his footage online, he was told by several locals that they'd had similar encounters. I was contacted by people in the surrounding area who saw the same thing, he said. One person wrote, my sister lives close to that area on the Mississippi. She's seen crazy stuff in the skies over the last several months. I think there might be something going on in that part of the state. Her neighbors came over now and watched the skies with them because they consistently see very strange things. Another person in Nauvoo, Illinois. I don't know why I said that. Nauvoo, like I'm in the Star Wars movie. less than 10 miles to the north said the same. They wrote, this is precisely the same chunk of sky my family repeatedly sees strange things in. Mr. Mitchell, a quality engineer by profession, is keeping an open mind about what the family witnessed. I've never encountered anything like this before, he said. As for intelligent life outside Earth, I think that it should be common sense that we can't be the only ones. And yes, I think they have visited us regularly. There have also been reports of strange objects in the sky since the dawn of time. They have to be something. So that article and the subsequent video are up on our site, darknessradio.com. Click on the news tab. You will find them there. Here's a weird-ass story. Oh, you have something to say? Go ahead.
I was just going to say, if you're ever going to see something and know whether you've seen a UFO or not, Keokuk, Iowa is going to be the place. I'm just saying, if you've seen anything in the sky, it's going to be Keokuk, Iowa.
Come on, dude. You mean to tell me that aliens are going to hang out over Keokuk and not over Eden Prairie, Minnesota?
No, I'm just saying it's going to be discernible in Keokuk, Iowa, because there ain't a damn thing there.
That's true. That I get.
Yeah.
What plane would fly over Keokuk, Iowa on purpose?
Yeah. I mean, you'll know if it's, you know, you'll know if it's a flying saucer, you'll know if it's a drone, you'll know if it's a plane, you'll know if it's a bird. There's nothing in Keokuk, Iowa. Just saying.
Not bird, nor plane, nor even frog. It's just little old me. It's Underdog.
You'll even know if it's Underdog. I mean, you'll be able to tell. Just saying.
What's the longest you've ever had insomnia? Like where you literally just couldn't sleep?
72 hours?
Okay, that sounds about right. I remember in college a couple times you and I came upon that. Speaking of college, Tim, I recently found an audio tape of you and I doing Wake Up Winona when we were on radio in 1988 together. I might see if I can get this digitized and put online so you can hear the beginnings of the partnership that is Dave and Tim.
I could actually, the clip you sent me, I could actually probably digitize it.
We have that, but I've got the whole cassette of our entire news segment. We might want to play that in the future at some point, but it's brutal. I'm very NPR as I listen. I also found two of my episodes of Sunday Night Softly, and I've got that NPR voice as we talk about a song going out by request. This is Desperado by the Eagles.
Very weird. I listened to that clip that you sent me. I don't think I've changed in 30 years.
No, you sound great. You sound like you do now. I sound like I sound horrible. I don't remember being that bad on radio. I always thought I did pretty decently, but no, very brutal. You know what else I found?
What's that?
Ion Entertainment that I did with our buddy Steve Beaudry, the Scarecrow.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Huh. I found one of those episodes. Again, he sounds fantastic, and I sound like a blabbering idiot. So, you know, I might just destroy these tapes. I don't know.
No, don't do that.
I don't know if that's the legacy I want to leave behind. Someday my kids pop in these tapes, and you're like, oh, it turns out that Debbie Gibson's hat was actually... It's just so stupid. Oh, my God, it's horrible.
You know why it's great to hold on to old air checks? Because you know you've grown from that. I mean, that's why it's great to hold on to them, because you have a timestamp and you can say, at least I know I've grown from that point. And you can actually hear the subtleties of where you've grown from that point to the next point. So that's why it's important to have those air checks.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah.
Well, the reason I was asking about sleep deprivation is I remember there were a couple times in college where we would go like an entire weekend without sleep and then collapse. I think the worst I ever had was about 4 days when I moved up to the Twin Cities. I've told the story in the past where I had that phantom limb syndrome where I was at work. I was in sales, and this is just funny for what it was. And I was doing sales and I was kicking ass that day, like kicking ass and taking numbers. And so much so that my managers were going back and listening to my call. I was in some kind of zone that is unbelievable. You know, on a normal day, I'd put up 2 or 3 sales. I was up to like 12 sales before lunch.
Wow.
And they're like, what is this guy doing? Is he faking it? Because, you know, you get paid on these things for turning them in. And they wanted to make sure I wasn't faking. So they listened to these recordings. And, you know, my buddy Kent, my manager at the time, came over and he patted me on the back. He's like, man, you're killing it today. Meanwhile, I'm taping my pinky on my right hand down to my palm with scotch tape. And, you know, when you're bored, you do stupid stuff when you're in sales. And I was a telemarketer, right? Mm-hmm. Don't hold that against me. And I'm taping my finger down. And he goes, what are you doing, man? Are you bored? And I said, no, man. When I woke up this morning, because I was getting like half an hour cat naps at best. Mm-hmm. I said, when I woke up, I realized somebody had replaced the pinky on my hand with somebody else's. And I'm just going to tape it down and take it off later. You know, meaning I was going to cut off my finger. And he's like, whatever. And then he realized I wasn't kidding. And he talked to me for a few minutes. And then he had to make a tough call. He went in and talked to the president of the company and our general manager. And he's like, listen, this guy's killing it today. Killing it. He's put up a week's worth of sales before lunch. But I think there's something wrong. So they actually bring me in the office. And I remember bits and pieces of this, but it was related back to me afterwards. And I was completely convinced somebody had removed my pinky and that whole quadrant going down into my palm and had put somebody else's on me while I slept for that half an hour. It was just, it made complete logical sense. The pinky didn't feel like it was mine, so I was taping it down so it wouldn't irritate me while I was trying to do sales. And they didn't know how to react. And then they, you know, started prodding me about how, are you on drugs? Are you supposed to be? Are you diabetic? I'm like, no, no, no. And then they're like, well, you know, Dave, how long, how much sleep have you had? I said, I haven't been sleeping well at all. I've been getting like an hour or two a night if I'm lucky. You know, I fall asleep at 5-6 o'clock in the morning. I got to get up at 7-7:30 and drive into work. And I remember Greg Cleary, my manager, going, all right, can you step out? We'll be. So they stepped out, and to their benefit, they could have kept me on the phone. I probably would have put up 40 sales that day. They drove me home, and Kent drove my car. Greg drove me in his car, and they dropped it off. But they made a stop at Walgreens and bought me NyQuil and a Benadryl.
Huh.
And they made me take a Benadryl and a shot of NyQuil. And they're like, just get some sleep and then come into work tomorrow. I'm like, okay. And they're, we'll pay it for today. Don't worry about it. I woke up 2 days later.
Oh my gosh.
2 days later, I was unconscious. And when I went in, I felt good. I was refreshed. I had that sleep hangover, but there, I had no real memory of any of this. And they were just worried that I was, and they like, can you wait till tomorrow to cut off your finger though? Okay. Don't do it today or tonight. Just wait till you wake up and then call us and tell us if it still feels bad, and we'll take you to the doctor and get it done the right way. I'm like, okay. And I woke up, thankfully, realizing it was still my pinky and my palm, so that didn't get cut off. But I tell you that to tell you this. A woman in China maintains she has not needed to close her eyes and go to sleep in over 4 decades. So for most of us, several days without sleep would leave us barely able to function. Yet for Li Jingzhang, in a woman from Henan, China, the idea – now, it sounds like I'm being rude when I say Jingzhang, but it's like Z-H-A-N – Z-Y-I-N-G, Jingzhang, right? I don't know how else you would say it.
Yeah.
A woman from Henan, China. The idea of falling asleep is itself nothing more than a distant memory. Now in her mid-40s, the last time she recalls sleeping was when she was a small child. While this might seem implausible, nobody has ever actually seen her sleep. Several of her friends and neighbors have repeatedly attempted to catch her in the act, but to no avail. Incredibly, Lee's claim of having never slept in 40 years is actually true. Well, sort of, according to this article. Doctors have now determined that she suffers from a very rare condition that sees her sleeping while awake and fully conscious, meaning she can be technically sleeping even while having a conversation with someone. The medical team used data collected during a 48-hour brainwave monitoring session to reveal that Lee got light and moderate sleep despite neither going to bed or closing her eyes. This sleep while awake phenomena is similar to sleepwalking. So while she hasn't technically gone without sleep for 40 years, she doesn't need to go to sleep like a normal person. As a result, she has lived twice as long as the rest of us. How weird is that?
That's bizarre.
Knowing somebody's running the ship when you're not there, does she have memories in those sleep zones, though? That's what I'm curious about. There's nothing more on that article.
I don't know. You would think you'd have to have some sort of subconscious memory, wouldn't you? And wouldn't you be able to pull that with hypnosis?
I don't know. Well, but I'm saying she might have full memory of it. I don't know if they didn't talk about that aspect of it. It would be interesting to dig into. Our final story is here, Tim.
Okay.
Let me remind people this Friday again, The Curse of Lizzie Borden, a new shock doc that I'm a part of, along with medium Chris Fleming, Sam Beltrusis, an actual bloodline relative of Lizzie Borden, and Luann Jolly, a paranormal investigator. We return to the murder site of the Borden family, and we examine the curse of Lizzie Borden. And was there something more at play than just a simple murder? That documentary is this weekend on Discovery Plus and Discovery Plus UK. It starts Friday. That's when it'll be made available. I don't mean it starts and it's an ongoing series. It's a one-off shock doc. If you have the commercial-based version of Discovery Plus, it's a two-hour shock doc. For those of you that were willing to pay $7 a month, you get a commercial-free for an hour and 36 minutes. So there you go. Our final story is here. It's a mystery that's endured for 76 years in a fabled area that many sailors and aviators have long said contains supernatural forces we don't understand. Of course, I'm talking about the Bermuda Triangle. On December 5th, 1945, 14 airmen flying five World War II torpedo bombers called Avengers took off from Naval Air Station Fort Lauderdale on a routine training mission over the Bermuda Triangle and were never seen again. The U.S. Navy even sent a Martin Mariner search plane out at the time to find the missing aircraft, and that plane and its crew of 13 that also disappeared. A new scientific investigation into the mysterious disappearance of the aircraft is the focus of the History Channel documentary History's Greatest Mysteries, narrated by Lawrence Fishburne, that is going to air this week. Kerry Sanders got a preview of the documentary on Today, Tuesday, as the mission's lead underwater explorer shared findings from the year-long scientific mission into the Bermuda Triangle, an area off the coast of Florida that extends southeast to Puerto Rico and north to Bermuda. Now, we see this round piece of wreckage with teeth like gears, a lead underwater explorer Mike Barnett says in the documentary. I'm thinking to myself, this looks like a gun turret. Emotions are running off the chart. Could this be one of the Avengers? It, in fact, was the wreckage of an Avenger, leading to the question of whether it's an Avenger from the mysterious Flight 19 that disappeared back in 1945. And that's a real question, Barnett told Sanders on Today. We don't know yet because a lot of people don't realize that there are hundreds of aircraft lost off the coast of Florida. This potentially might be one of the Avengers from Flight 19, but it still has a story to tell. And by knowing that, which aircraft it is, we know where Flight 19 isn't. Muddying the waters is the fact that researchers found Navy records that suggest the wreckage discovered in the documentary may be a different crash. Since 1930, more than 325 planes and more than 1,200 ships have disappeared, crashed, or sank into the Bermuda Triangle, which is an area roughly the size of Alaska. Sailors and aviators have often speculated over the years that the Bermuda Triangle contains inexplicable forces that could not potentially mean the presence of extraterrestrials, which Barnett is just not buying. He believes the wreckage of Flight 19 is out there, but not that the ship went down for any reasons straight out of Close Encounters of the Third Kind. Not one bit, he told Sanders. I rank it with Easter Bunny and the Tooth Fairy. How dare you, sir? How dare you? So that new documentary is on History Channel. I want to watch that. I'm fascinated to see what they're able to uncover. And does this turn out to be the Flight 19? History's Greatest Mysteries. You can check that out on History Channel, probably on Discovery Plus as well, because they do cover it there. Thank you guys for tuning in and spending some time with us here. I hope you guys will tune in this Friday and check out the Shock Doc, The Curse of Lizzie Borden. We'll be back with you next week.
But Dave, Dave.
Phenomena. Phenomena. Phenomena.
I like it.
There you go.
Thank you for aiding our OCD, like people that have been twitching all show wondering where that was going to be played.
Yeah.
So it is out there. Oh, by the way, we are back tomorrow, Tim. I don't know if I've told you about this, but we do have a show tomorrow, Thursday, mm-hmm. as well. I was about to just say goodbye. We'll see you next week. But it turns out, Tim, it's not that easy.
No.
We don't just go away today and return next week. Obviously, we had True Crime Tuesday yesterday.
Yeah.
Today's brand new Supernatural News and Parashare. Mm-hmm. But tomorrow, Tim, tomorrow, we have a remarkable show lined up. It is The Way Through the Woods, A Child's Escape Through the Haunted Forests of World War II Germany. We're going to talk about that tomorrow. Anna Maria Manalo, our guest. So make sure you tune in and check out that episode. We talk about her previous books and the book she's currently working on, some weird, strange supernatural phenomena. That's tomorrow.
Phenomena.
That's tomorrow on the Best in Paranormal Podcast Radio. I'm Dave, that's Tim. You've been listening to Darkness Radio.